Good day, everyone, and welcome to today's Elimination of Non-Military Deferred Action call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, you'll have the opportunity to ask questions during the question-and-answer session. You may register to ask a question by pressing the star and one on your touch-tone phone. You may withdraw yourself from the queue by pressing the pound key. Please note, I'll be standing by if you should need any assistance, and today's call may be recorded. It is now my pleasure to turn the conference over to Mr. Greg Chen.
Thank you, Leo. Good morning to all the reporters and others who have joined our telepress conference about the changes to the deferred action policy. We have a very strong lineup of speakers today to inform you about this policy. And so I'm going to introduce them briefly and then give some brief remarks before turning it over to the first speaker. So to give you the quick lineup, we'll begin this morning with Congresswoman Ayanna Pressley from Massachusetts. Then we'll hear from Senator Ed Markey, also of Massachusetts. Third will be Congresswoman Judy Chu from California. And I should just say we're already just so appreciative that we have members of Congress now starting to speak out about concern for this deferred action policy change. After the three of them speak, you'll hear fourth from Masa Kanbabi, who is the chair of the New England chapter of the American Immigration Lawyers Association, and she has clients who have already received denial notices about deferred action, and she has been coordinating efforts on the ground in Massachusetts to gather information about that. Because of the large number of hospitals and excellent health care in the region, many of these cases are already being impacted there. Finally, we'll hear from Suhas Kamgonkar of New Jersey. She is somebody who has already been impacted by this change. She and her family have already felt the impacts of this. She is represented by an AILA member, Brent Renison. After Suhas speaks, we'll be turning the call back over to the operator and be taking questions from any of you as reporters. So I'm going to give some brief remarks before turning it over to Congresswoman Pressley. The big picture here is that last week, the American Immigration Lawyers Association learned that as of August 7th of this year, USCIS has stopped accepting and adjudicating requests for non-military deferred action cases and requests at its local field offices, and this is spanning across the country. This includes, but it's not limited to, requests for deferred action that is based on compelling medical needs of undocumented individuals and their families. It's also impacting lots of other individuals, and one of our speakers today, Suhas, will be describing what has happened to her. This change is particularly harsh as it affects an incredibly vulnerable population. In addition, it is being applied retroactively. What that means is that it impacts not just those seeking requests for deferred action right now, but also all requests that were already pending with the agency on or before August 7th. Already, USCIS has begun issuing denial notices, and we've heard from many practitioner attorneys about notices that they've received. USCIS has stated that this change will not affect DACA cases or other deferred action requests that are currently handled at USCIS service centers as distinct from local field offices. And that would include at the service centers deferred action requests for, let's say, VAWA or U visa-based cases. As I mentioned before, this change will not impact requests for deferred action made for members of the military, including veterans, enlistees, or their family members. AILA is now calling upon USCIS to reverse course on what we view as a mean-spirited policy because it will hurt such a highly compelling population of vulnerable individuals. We're encouraging AILA members and the public to join us in urging Congress to demand that USCIS reverse this policy change. You can go to our website, www.aila.org, and there's an action alert there that you can contact your elected leaders to ask them to change this. We also have lots of resources on our website that press can look at. We have a web page dedicated to the deferred action issue. It includes not only Praxis resources and basic information, as well as a video featuring AILA policy expert Paul Stern describing this policy. So without further ado, I'm going to turn it over to Congresswoman Ayanna Pressley of Massachusetts. Congresswoman?
Thank you, Ayla, for your partnership in organizing this press conference today. It is just so critical that we continue to bear witness to and to shine a light on the impact of this administration's continued attacks on our immigrant brothers and sisters. We are drinking from a fire hose of insult and assault, and every day, and sometimes it seems by the hour, they reach a new low, and the cruelty really is the point. The occupant of this White House continues to implement new humane and xenophobic policies, and with this decision, again, this administration has hit a new low. The trauma of a chronic illness and diagnosis, you know, all of our families have struggled with such things. This is a transcendent issue. We know those struggles. And to be fighting for your life, imagine on top of that, facing deportation on top of a cancer diagnosis. Deportation from the United States with this type of medical condition is a death sentence, and we should not mince words about that. And the fear of deportation will only result in families having to suffer in the shallows, in the shadows. So, and already in Massachusetts, we've heard it of 20 cases where individuals have received these denial letters, and they will have tragic implications for their families. And I want to just lift up one of those because, you know, the best advice that I've received as a new member is to never forget the plot, and the plot is the people. And so we have to continue to lift up the stories of the people, which so painfully and tragically highlights the impact of these cruel and racist policies. Samuel is a five-year-old from a remote part of Brazil. He was diagnosed with a condition that prevents him from being able to eat solid food. And without the amazing care that he receives from Boston Children's Hospital, he won't be able to receive the life-supporting nutrients that he needs to live. And as congressional representatives, it's our job to shed light on this cruelty, but also to conduct meaningful oversight. And I've already been in touch and reached out to Chairman Cummings about that, since I do serve on the Oversight and Reform Committee. But this has just been troubling at every level, the lack of transparency around the process, the fact that there was no public comment period, not even a public announcement of this policy change, and the fact that USCIS is claiming that ICE will be processing these claims, but reports show that ICE was not even notified, nor did they even have a process for administering these applications. So, you know, this is one of a litany of hurts in this coordinated attack against our immigrant brothers and sisters, and it's just one more policy change that is reckless and short-sighted, and another move to carry out this administration's hateful agenda. You just run out of adjectives. The cruelty is the point. And so I'll continue to work with my colleagues and all of you to demand answers, to call for hearings and further investigations into this most recent move, and organize and mobilize. And as I said at the border, you know, we'll continue to lift up these stories in the hopes that this administration will see the light. And if they don't, we will bring the fire. And I thank you for being a part of that.
Thank you so much, Congresswoman. Everyone, that was Congresswoman Ayanna Pressley of Massachusetts, and we appreciate your leadership on this. Next, I'm going to turn over to Senator Ed Markey of Massachusetts. Senator?
Thank you, Greg, so much, and thanks to my good friends, Congresswoman Ayanna Pressley, Congresswoman Judy Chu, for their leadership on immigrant rights. And a special thank you to our host, the American Immigration Lawyers Association, our fiercest warriors for immigrant families. Since the day that Donald Trump announced his presidential campaign, he has singled out immigrants as the target of his administration. His now infamous, quote, vilifying Mexican immigrants as drug dealers and criminals foreshadowed his own criminally cruel anti-immigrant agenda. Over the past 2.5 years, President Trump has used every tool at his disposal to inflict harm on immigrants and chip away at our identity as a nation of refuge. But the new depths of this cruelty are most vividly on display today. For decades, U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services, or USCIS, has used deferred action to allow immigrants requiring immediate aid to stay in the United States. USCIS has commonly provided deferred action to those with serious medical conditions who require continued treatment here. We should not forsake people with serious illnesses who may face death if they returned to a country with limited treatment options for their disease. But as of August 7th, the Trump administration is doing just that, because Citizenship and Immigration Services is no longer considering medical deferred action requests. Kids with cancer, cystic fibrosis, and muscular dystrophy are now being told that they must leave the country or be put in the hands of ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement. These patients and their families are already distressed as a result of a serious illness. Now, the Trump administration is removing any sense of certainty from their lives by telling families and patients they no longer have an avenue for relief without being subject to removal proceedings or deportation. And there is no guarantee that ICE will even grant requests to stay in America for treatment. These patients could be facing a de facto death sentence. This is a new low even for Donald Trump. This administration is now literally deporting kids with cancer. Perhaps that is why it was too ashamed to announce this policy change publicly, and instead has been notifying families by handing them denials with instructions to leave the country. But we will not let Donald Trump hide from the consequences of this inhumanity. We have a responsibility to shine a light on every single immoral anti-immigrant action of this administration. We have a responsibility to fight back on behalf of our friends and our neighbors. And we have a responsibility to hold the architects of these despicable policies to account. And that is why Representative Presley and I, along with others, are leading a bicameral letter to the Trump administration to express our opposition to this policy and to demand internal documents relevant to this decision-making. There must be accountability for this inhumanity. As a country, we must have the decency to stand together against the deportation of sick, vulnerable children. Unless we make a stand now, the Trump administration's anti-immigrant agenda will leave a stain on our nation and forever upend the very foundation of democracy in the United States. If you kicked Donald Trump in the heart, you would break your toe. It is absolutely immoral to be deporting children with cancer. We cannot and we will not allow this to stand. Thank you.
Senator Markey, thank you for those very heartfelt comments and for your continuing leadership on this. We are so glad that you will be leading this bicameral letter urging for more answers and changes at USCIS on this policy. Without further ado, I'm going to turn over to Congresswoman Judy Chu, who's on the other side of our country in district in California. Congresswoman?
Yes, thank you. I am calling from Los Angeles, the heart of the immigrant community, and I can only imagine that the people here, what they're feeling about this policy and the fear that this must be causing. There's no better proof of the cruelty at the heart of Donald Trump's war on immigrants than this decision to kick kids with cancer out of their hospital beds. Trump told us that he was taking a hard line on immigration because of crime, the economy, and the rule of law. We know none of this to be true. His motivation is and always has been to use xenophobia and bigotry to divide the country and animate his base, even if he has to threaten the lives of children to do it. To be clear, allowing agency discretion for undocumented immigrants with serious medical conditions was a common sense policy that was only utilized by about 1,000 individuals each year. That is not a large population, but it is a vulnerable one. Fortunately for many, the Obama administration recognized that people coming to America in order to access the best health care in the world and maybe even save a loved one's life are not deportation priorities. These families deserve the certainty of knowing that they can stay together and in one place while seeking treatment for diseases like cancer, HIV, cerebral palsy, and more. There can be no other explanation for why you would target such a small and vulnerable community other than if your goal was to spread fear and hardship. Trump didn't even have the courage of conviction to announce this move to the public. Instead, he silently and cowardly began to send his threats of deportation to a handful of immigrants waiting on life-saving treatment. And making matters worse, he is applying this change retroactively such that deferred action requests filed prior to August 7th are subject to the new policy. But this is all in character for an administration that is separating families and abusing children in prison camps at the border. They are even targeting legal immigrants through their public charge rule, which will force families to go hungry or get sick out of fear that they would be punished for using public services that they've earned and paid into. And in fact, I've already introduced a bill that would defund the public charge rule, but it's clear that this administration will not stop looking for any opportunity to wage war on immigrants. So we now have to highlight the cruelty of this policy to expose the truth behind the president's war on immigrants. I'm grateful to the reporters who are on the call today and appreciate your help in alerting the country. I will be signing on to the letter to the administration. I will be participating in any investigation that there is on this, and I, in fact, question the fact that they could so easily change this rule without going into any formal rulemaking policy. We must stop this cruel, cruel policy. Thank you for joining us today, and I look forward to your questions.
Thank you so much, Congresswoman, and I'm so glad you mentioned that issue about how this policy was actually rolled out to the public. Normally, advance notice of these kinds of policy changes is provided by the government, but not this time. And it's only upon inquiry from AILA and others did USCIS acknowledge that they had begun this policy as of August 7th. And it is really unfair that there has not been greater notice and transparency about this issue to the public so that people can comment and make sure that the policy is, first of all, has a light shone on it so people understand it, but also have the opportunity to explain and provide comment on how the policy should even be done. With that comment, I'm going to turn it over now to the New England Chapter Chair of the American Immigration Lawyers Association, Masa Khanbabi. Masa, are you there?
Yes. Good morning, everybody. Thank you all for joining. So as you've heard, deferred action is a very critical, not a very large program that's been recognized as a form of prosecutorial discretion in our country for many, many decades. It's, in fact, a cornerstone of our healthy American judiciary system. And these deep roots provide life-saving protection for individuals that have very special circumstances and needs for wanting to stay in this country. Deferred action is based on very practical considerations. First, in making sure we use our government resources wisely to go only after the most dangerous and not the most vulnerable. But it also has really deep humanitarian considerations that we should not target people that are extremely sick or dying or people that have very compelling circumstances to stay in the United States. I received two denials on cases of mine last week. One of them was for a young man who came to the United States on a visitor visa to obtain critical mental health treatment, and sadly his condition deteriorated significantly and he had to be hospitalized. There is no way that he is going to be able to leave this hospital now to depart despite this letter saying he has 33 days to leave. The other case is a young 14-year-old girl who came here legally on a visitor visa for major heart surgery last year. She's recovering well, but actually has to have follow-up surgery. She actually has vocal cord paralysis and has surgery planned on that coming up very soon. And she needs constant follow-up and treatment and is devastated by this letter saying that she needs to leave in 33 days or that she could be put into deportation proceedings. Her family, her mother, and her sister are here caring for her, and her father travels back and forth from Spain because he works there to pay for all of her medical care. As Greg mentioned, the government has departed from longstanding practice to grandfather in pending cases. So it's flabbergasting that the government is actually denying applications that have been pending for many, many, many months. For cases that have been interviewed and were near approval stage, now everyone is getting denial notices. The idea of putting people dying or sick with cancer or with other significant humanitarian considerations into a deportation process in front of an immigration judge is astonishing. I mean, this is a new low. And I think that the fact that the government is making this change really quietly shows about how little regard they have for people. The fact that they didn't put any plans into place on how these people should be able to move forward and make a request, as they are now claiming that ICE will take this on, I think we see that this was really an afterthought, and they had no consideration at all for what these people were going through. And frankly, I think they actually were hoping to cause more fear and panic among immigrants, because that's been their modus operandi for the last 2 years, is to deter people from wanting to come to the United States, to deter people from wanting to stay in the United States, and to deter companies from wanting to hire immigrants. So I am not surprised by this change. Sadly, I think it is part of this larger scheme that the administration has undertaken to try to dismantle the legal immigration system in this country. They're making all of these changes through policy, not through legislative change. And it's because they know that most of their policies are unconscionable, and that even Republican senators or representatives would probably not agree to most of these. And we see that when it comes to their attacks on the H-1B program, attacks on international students being able to stay here, the visa processing becoming more difficult. So sadly, this is part of this larger scheme of reducing immigration to this country. And I think disingenuously, the government is trying to, you know, move on and trying to come up with other changes to distract us from paying attention to the problems that they're creating. And, you know, thank you all for putting some attention to this. Immigration attorneys, we're getting up every morning, putting on our boxing gloves and going to work to try to fight against all of these, I think, primarily unconstitutional changes and really heartless policy changes.
Thank you so much, Masa. Just your continuing efforts on this have made such a difference. And as I mentioned before, there are many hospitals that have already been impacted by this, including those that Masa's clients have been in. And to make sure that the American public understands the impact of this across the board and to healthcare providers is very important. Finally, and perhaps most importantly, our last speaker is Suhas Kamgonkar of Franklin Park, New Jersey. She is somebody who's already been impacted by this, she and her family. And I'm going to let her explain to you the circumstances of her family and how this change has made a difference to them. Go ahead, Suhas.
Yeah, thank you, Greg. So I'm really grateful, firstly, for this opportunity to speak at this telepress conference of ALA. And my attorney, Brent Renison, who's on the line, I'm very grateful to him for his support all along. So here's my story. I came here 14 years ago legally. We came as a family of three, my husband, me, and our daughter, who was 11 years old at the time. We had an approved petition for permanent residency where my husband was the primary beneficiary and my daughter and I were secondary. Meantime, my husband passed away suddenly. After his passing, I worked with my attorney, Brent Renison, on having the green card petition approved for me. I have been in line for a green card for almost 10 years now. If my husband were alive, I would be allowed to stay in my home of 14 years to complete the rest of this wait. But now I've been told that I must leave because he passed away. I feel as if I'm being punished for my husband's death. Being separated from my daughter now is an unbearable thought. While my green card petition has been approved under 204L relief, I have to wait until my date is current to adjust for permanent residency. And therefore, I applied for humanitarian deferred action, a request which has been denied. And now I stand being separated from my daughter, who's my only family member, and I am her sole surviving parent. My daughter and I are extremely sad that our feeling of loss continues relentlessly well beyond the loss of my husband. We are unable to heal together as a family amidst this chaotic uncertainty gripping us, jeopardizing our mental, physical, and emotional well-being and functionality. The roadblocks placed at every turn of our journey are serving their exact purpose of exhausting us with such force that no matter how deep we dig for inner strength, we seem to be treated with no empathy nor fairness. So today I live in hope, though, that my request for deferred action is granted and I continue my presence in this country to remain close to my daughter and until I'm eligible to adjust status to become a permanent resident. I thank you again for this opportunity. And thank you, Brent Renison.
Ms. Kamgonkar, thank you for your just sharing with us your story of how this has impacted you and what your family has gone through. Thank you for your courage and your strength to share this so publicly. It's incredibly moving to hear how the chaos of this policy change is going to make it so much harder on your family. I do wish you good luck, and I hope that hope doesn't go unfulfilled. There is discretion that this administration has, even if USCIS is closing off these local field offices from accepting these. I am not particularly hopeful that the remaining venue that's been left open, ICE, is supposed to be the place that people seeking deferred action could go to, but as yet we are not aware at ALEF of any formal policy that ICE is putting in place to be able to accept these, any formal protocol. But thank you again, Suhas Kamgonkar, for sharing your story. So without
thank
further
you.
Ado, yeah, thank you again. Without further ado, I'm going to turn this back to the operator, Leo, to open up the lines to the reporters that I'm sure have many questions about this policy. And I believe Congresswoman Presley has already left. I'm hoping the other speakers are still on the line here to answer those questions. Leo, would you please give instructions to the reporters as to how to queue up questions?
Absolutely. If you'd like to ask a question, please press the star and one on your touch-tone telephone. To withdraw yourself from the queue, you may press the pound key. Once again, to ask a question, press star one now on your touch-tone telephone. We'll take our first question from Marcela Garcia of the Boston Globe. Your line is open.
Hi. I have a two-part question to the panel in general. Number one, do any of you have a more accurate number of cases? I know that there's that 20 cases here in Boston. I've heard of additional 11 cases from the Haitian community here, but do any of you have a more updated number of cases, whether from Massachusetts or regionally or nationally? And then the second question is, do any of you have an update on any potential legal action taken, you know, in the courts to oppose this policy?
Hi, this is Masa. It's good to hear from you again. Sadly, we don't have more data and numbers, and part of it is
okay.
Because the government doesn't really track, doesn't really provide us this information. How they track it internally is unknown. There have been a number of FOIAs put forward to CIS by immigration attorneys from AILA, and we have not been able to determine any solid numbers. My estimate is still that it's in the thousands. One way to track some of that data is to look at work authorizations that have been approved for people who have been granted deferred action. Unfortunately, that is a big category that includes people that have gotten deferred action through the military program, through MAVNI, and things like that. But for example, in fiscal year 2017, roughly 8,700 work authorization documents were approved, which is a significant drop, actually, from fiscal year 2016, which was roughly 12,400 or 500, excuse me. And so I'm actually curious and alarmed to see this reduction, because it seems to me that they're denying many more deferred action requests in this administration than in past administrations. And, you know, I think that bears some investigation to find out some more about these numbers.
This is Congressmember Judy Chu, and I want to say that the top priority in terms of what we're asking Acting Director Cuccinelli is that they provide data on the number of requests for non-military deferred action from fiscal year 2015 to fiscal year 2019 as broken down by fiscal year. And we want to have the numbers, especially that pertain to medical deferred action. So the letter that we Congress members want to send to Acting Director Cuccinelli asks a series of 8 questions that would shine a light on the documentation necessary so that we can really understand what's going on here.
Thank you so much, Congresswoman. This is Greg to the moderator. My apologies, I had to drop off for a moment. I'm aware of statistically, I don't know if this got mentioned before, is that USCIS has stated they've received about 1,000 requests annually in recent years, but we don't have any further data in terms of how many are granted, et cetera. Was there a follow-up question on that, or should we go to the next?
Yeah, no, just if any of you have any information on any action taken in the courts to oppose this policy, I know there was, I think the ACLU was looking into filing a lawsuit. Do any of you have any information on that?
This is Greg Chen again. I also am aware that ACLU has indicated it will sue, but I don't have further detail on that.
Okay, fair enough. Thank you.
Thank you. Leo, another question?
And once again, to ask a question, press star 1 on your touch-tone phone. We'll move next to Julia Preston of the Marshall Project. Your line is open.
Yeah, I just wanted to get a little more detail from the Congresswoman about, is this going to be going through a committee, or this request for data and information, how are you channeling that? And also, has USCIS given any indication of what the justification is for these denials, especially with respect to people who are from illnesses? Have they given any logic for this?
CIS provide logic? What a novel idea. No, they haven't. The letters that have been going out basically state that our office no longer considers deferred action requests, and as such, your request for deferred action has been denied. That's it. They're not going to provide any logic or reasoning in this.
So this is Congressmember Judy Chu. So our letter will be bicameral, and we are gathering the signatures, and of course, the different offices are looking over the wording of it. But it is, of course, directed to Acting Director Cuccinelli. And besides providing data, it asks questions on why USCIS transferred the responsibility on military, non-military deferred action requests to ICE, which is very, very, very serious transfer, and also whether USCIS engaged with external stakeholders to solicit feedback, even though we know the answer is no, of course. And then why USCIS elected to implement this policy change without advance public notice, and whether USCIS and ICE had finalized and operationalized procedures for ICE's assumption of responsibility, and had they done it with any kind of substantiating documentation. Well, there are numerous other questions as well. So far, a hearing has not been scheduled, but nonetheless, we want to get this letter out quickly and get answers back. So certainly this can include having meetings directly with the top people at USCIS and ICE.
And this is Greg Chen, Julia. If you would like to see a sample of the notices that have gone out denying deferred action requests, we can provide a redacted versions of those that provide the very brief explanation that USCIS gives for the decisions to deny. And we certainly do hope that USCIS will respond to Congresswoman Chu and the other members of Congress that joined this letter asking for information, because we have not seen any explanation yet explaining the policy or its justification or any information about data for or any studies that USCIS or ICE may have done about how this change would impact the population and, you know, what would the broader implications be. So we hope USCIS will be forthcoming with that and more transparent than they have been as of yet. Thank you for the question. Operator, Leo, would you queue up the next question?
Absolutely. We'll take our next question from Jeff Gamage of the Philadelphia Inquirer. Your line is open.
Hi, and thanks for the call. A sample letter would be great that has gone out to families, if you're able to post that on your website. My question is, do you expect families to comply? How do you tell your child to get out of their hospital bed?
This is Attorney Masuk and Bobby. Yeah, I mean, families are asking that question, saying, are you telling me that the government wants me to take my child out of the hospital and board them on a plane to go to a country where they can't get that treatment like they're getting in the United States? So, for example, my 14-year-old client with a heart condition was told by her doctors back in Spain, or her parents were told, when she was 4 years old that she would not live beyond the age of 10 or 12 because her heart conditions were so serious. She's 14 years old now. And she's doing, you know, comparably well considering the seriousness of her condition. But there's no way that she could go back to Spain and get treatment. And that's why this is just appalling that the government even is even suggesting such a thing.
Masa and Greg, this is Brent Renison. May I say a word?
Yeah, please do. Everybody, this is Brent Renison, who is the attorney for Suhas Kamgankar. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, I just received an update from Senator Markey's office that does really have bearing on what we're talking about here. But, and you know, I can share the language of our refusal. It basically said to in order to uphold the fair, you know, to fairly and faithfully uphold the immigration laws, we're sending all these cases to ICE, you know. But essentially, ICE has now said, this is from Senator Markey's office, that ICE does not consider deferred action requests until someone has been through removal proceedings and has an order of removal. And they're not changed. There's nothing with USCIS's refusal to take these cases that's going to affect ICE or its policies. So unfortunately for our case, that means we are at a dead end. There's nothing more we can do. And this was a last ditch effort in what is a war. We feel like every time we fight these cases, and unfortunately, this is a dead end for us because Suhas does not have any kind of removal proceedings. For her to go through removal proceedings would be extremely detrimental to her case. It would result in a 10-year bar. So she will now, unfortunately, I'm just learned now that there is no hope for us to get deferred action.
Thank you, Brent. Jeff from Philly Inquirer, was there any more follow-up on that question?
No, thank you for your answer.
And once again, if you'd like to ask a question, please press the star and one key now on your touch tone telephone. We'll take our next question from Sarah Betancourt of Commonwealth Magazine. Your line is open.
Hi.
Go ahead.
And once again, Ms. Betancourt, please repress star 1 on your touchtone phone. We'll take that question now from Sarah Betancourt of Commonwealth.
I just wanted to see if USCIS has mentioned reissuing the letters since the meeting yesterday morning with ICE leadership.
Sarah, I think you got cut off a little bit. Could you repeat the question?
Has USCIS mentioned reissuing the letters since the meeting yesterday with ICE leadership?
So maybe as a clarification, which letter are you referring to that would be reissued, Sarah? Do you mean that a policy, an announcement of the policy, or about the deferred action denial notices?
The deferred action renewal notices.
So this is Greg Chen with AILA. I haven't heard of any reissuing of this policy. To my knowledge, the policy, you know, was not publicly announced in any formal way by USCIS. We discovered it after hearing from our AILA practitioners, members like MASA in Massachusetts, who had started receiving these notices. But I haven't heard of any formal release or announcement by USCIS. And I should also just mention, to circle back to the questions about the notices, we have those already posted on our website. If you go to www.aila.org and click on Featured Issues, we have a featured issue dedicated to deferred action, and you can get the redacted notices from USCIS. And I also just mentioned in follow-up to the previous questions about the purposes justifying this. What we know is that USCIS offer the following logic: that field offices will no longer consider non-military requests for deferred action, comma, to instead focus agency resources on faithfully administering our nation's lawful immigration system. And then the other perfunctory statement they say is that the basis for the denial is that they are no longer adjudicating these cases, which is not really an explanation, but just a statement. Ms. Betancourt, did you have a follow-up to that? I'm not sure I answered your question.
No, it's fine. Thank you.
Did any of the other speakers have comment on that? Leo, do we have further questions in the queue from the reporters?
There are no further questions at this time.
While we give the opportunity for any final reporters to queue up and ask questions, I'm going to give a last opportunity for any of the speakers to make a final comment. I'll go in the order we had before. Congresswoman Presley and Senator Markey have already dropped off. So Congresswoman Chu, is there any final remark that you would like to offer?
We will be pursuing a follow-up to our letter and be issuing it very shortly. And we will be also pressing for hearings and a questioning of how they could release this policy without any kind of public notice or rulemaking.
Thank you so much,
we
Congresswoman.
We must stop this policy. Yeah.
I could not agree more. And AILA is standing here beside you doing everything we can to support these efforts. Masa Kanbabi from New England chapter.
Yes, I just would love to make sure that the word gets out there so that people that have been affected who may not have representation through an attorney or a legal services organization to please reach out. Don't be afraid, and and come forward with your cases so we can show the American public and our elected representatives what's happening, and that the elected representatives like Congresswoman Chu, who are doing amazing work in holding the government responsible, one that they not only follow their own laws and procedures, but that they do it in a safe and sound and reasonable way for our country, and not come up with false excuses of why so many immigration programs are being impacted in such a negative way.
Thank you so much, Masa, for your leadership on this and just dedication to your clients and their cases. Finally, Suhas Kamgonkar, do you have a final comment?
Yes, Greg.
I'm extremely disappointed. Brent has just given us information about this finality, and I'm just trying to wrap my head around all this because my daughter is out on the site working. She's an engineer, and I have to break this news yet again. We've already had several sleepless nights over this. There's nothing else to say, really. Yeah. It's just that there is a lot of indignity despite following all the rules and laws of this country. This is what we get. And that is very, very upsetting to us.
That's thank all. You. Thank you, Ms. Kamgonkar, for your remarks. And I honestly don't know what else to say at this point. I am certainly moved by what you've said. I think everybody here is. I hope your situation gets some resolution so that you and your daughter can have some peace of mind. And I hope your comments will galvanize everybody who is listening on this call to tell this story, to explain the challenges that this policy is really creating and the incredible pain this is creating to people across the country. And we hope that USCIS will listen and consider revising its policy. Operator, do we have any further questions in the queue from reporters?
There are no further questions in queue.
Well, then, this concludes our call today. Again, I want to thank all of our speakers, Ms. Kamgonkar, Ms. Kambabi, as well as the members of Congress, Congresswoman Presley, Senator Markey, and Congresswoman Chu for taking the time to inform reporters and the public about this situation. And with that, thank you for joining, and we conclude our telepresser. Have a good morning.